My name is Chris Huskisson, and I'm here with Louis Zoller-Bickett for a second interview to talk about a couple of projects that Louis's been involved in over the years since the early 80s and since the time that I met you, Louis. They are the wrappings, the cultural mudding, your photographic essay projects in general, and I think we'll end today with by talking about some of your poetry and having you read a few things, if you don't mind. So welcome back,
Louis. Thank you.
Thank you for coming. Let's start with your wrappings. When I met you back in the early 1980s, you were beginning to wrap things, and it was very intriguing for myself and my husband. We collected a couple of pieces, and in your talking about them and what they were for you, maybe you could reference a particular piece that we have in our collection, and that's called Pregnant Landscape.
Yes. Well, the wrappings are often called, referred to as totems because of them, many of them having totemic shapes. Started in a really interesting fashion. I started making them the summer of 1982, hundreds of them, and many of the backgrounds and the casings of them were made with cotton and canvas fabric that I had painted or stained or tie-dyed. And then I consequently had a really huge amount of surplus material left over of the material that I didn't use. And Arturo Sandoval, who I had recently met that summer, was in my studio on Lyndhurst Place, and he said, "Oh, you ought to strip these fabrics, these paint cloths, and, you know, make forms out of them." And we had a discussion about it, and I started doing that, and I tried it, and I made these little totemic shapes that went into that. As the years progressed, I worked on those for about 20 years. Before I sort of abandoned them due to basically just having hand damage from having to stretch this fabric really, really tautly. And they went from the totemic wrap shapes into bas reliefs that went on the wall. And I do know, Christine, one that you have is one of the seminal pieces, the Pregnant series. Those Pregnant shapes were based on two things. They were bas reliefs or pillows. They often look like pillows or packages that hung on the wall or would lay flat on the ground. And they either referred to the pregnant shape of a woman or to at the same time, which is sort of an odd juxtaposition, to Vietnam body bags. My original intent was to do over 50,000 of them, one for each dead in Vietnam. And of course, that obviously quickly proved to be impractical for many different reasons.
I found out later, many years later, that Pregnant Landscape is full of underwear.
That is true. A friend of mine, Jamie McPherson from Louisville, I was having in that summer of 82 and into 83, I hadn't figured out what kind of materials to use as the stuffing, because some of them, like yours, come off the wall quite a bit. They do indeed look like a trimester pregnancy. They're so large. Jamie had inherited all these corsets and underwear, just a ridiculous amount of them from his grandmother when she died. And he brought bags of them over to the studio. And yours indeed, if it were x-rayed, you would see all sorts of feminine garments as a stuffing. And then later, the stuffing was turned into and went from underwear, which was hard to come by when I ran out of it, to cotton fabric. Carpet padding was the most common subsequent stuffing I used.
So if we can move to another project, but before we do, I'd like to maybe ask the question or just point out my observation, and that is, in your growing as an artist, you oftentimes move from object to concept, And I think that the mudding performances or the cultural mudding ritual, I believe they started in 1989, and you did one recently in 2015.
Yes.
And how those really sort of move you beyond an object-based sort mm-hmm. of artistic expression into concept.
Yes. Well, I think the common denominator that I had not really thought of until the director of the Speed, Julian, director or the curator of the Contemporary Museum at the Speed, then curator, Julian Robeson, said, the common denominator of everything I do is containment. Everything is contained, contained by something. The totems were, you know, these forms that were contained by these tightly wrapped pieces of fabric and then often brightly painted or painted to resemble raku pottery. Sort of this and almost made them look like bones. The collage boxes that preceded those were definitely things were contained within a box or a sphere or a little tableau. And then when it came to the performance work, really the only performance work I've ever done was a very large body work called The Cultural Mudman Rituals, which was sort of this patriarchal kind of title because I did many women as well. But these people were covered in dirt and mud from significant areas. When I did one in Paris, France, it was from the garden of the chateau that I was staying at. Civil War battlefields were often the source of gathered mud for the muddings. And the people were covered in mud. And very often it would be very, very thick and lumpy. And sometimes there would even be small pieces of rock or grass or sod in the mud that would fall off during the course of the performance. And in the case of a public performance, it added a significant element that was very eerie when we did them up at galleries in UK where the acoustics were sort of odd, the rock hitting the plastic floor covering would sound very ominous. And the crowds were always very, very quiet and very reverential, like they were witnessing some sort of religious function. And covering these models in mud, I even did children and babies, babies in arms. Their sex would be often obscured by the mud. And in the case of people of color, I remember one woman had these beautiful dreadlocks. If it weren't for the dreadlocks and a man I did with dreadlocks, you couldn't tell that they were black people at all. The color of their skin was just completely obliterated, and it made them neutral and took them out of the rim of, you know, how we judge people that look different from us, to like they all sort of became looking like the same. And I did some really interesting ones. I did one at, as I said, at a private party at a chateau in Paris, France. It was just really fascinating. And I did one at the Anita Madden Derby party. That was the largest one I ever did, I suppose. 3,000 or 4,000 people saw that one. And I did one for a friend of mine's senior project, her senior art project at the downtown library. And also did one at Eastern when I was doing a lecture on my art show there. We did what I called a commando one. And without telling anyone, a model came from the audience. And I very quickly put a drop cloth on the floor and a bucket of warm mud was emerged from where I had it hidden. And I remember the professors looked like I thought they were going to jump out of their skin. They didn't know what to do. And it was really very exciting. It was a violent snowstorm was ensuing outside. And the students just loved it. I think they felt like they saw something they shouldn't be seeing, because we have a puritanical view of, as Americans, of nudity. So whenever you have it in a public place, it has those connotations, I think.
I also think the performance at Al's Bar, it was in 2015, I believe, had some similar connotations where you stripped down the two models on stage before mudding those two individuals. One was female, one was male, I believe. And it started pouring down rain.
Right.
Could you talk a little bit about that particular performance as it being your last cultural?
That was the last one I did. I sort of plan on doing more. I never like to think that anything's particularly done. It was very interesting. The first thing that was interesting is that I have a mobility issue, and I was definitely experiencing it that night. And I had never done one where I felt like I couldn't completely move. I don't know if I can't remember if I was using a cane then or not. If I wasn't, I should have been. It started raining, and I don't remember lightning. I think I probably would have stopped if it were lightning, but it was definitely sort of thundering and giant, streaks of rain that would wash the dirt off, and then I would put it back on, which really, really added to it. I was really thrilled with it. And the photographs taken by the illustrious Guy Mendez are just absolutely beautiful, which I've never really published, and I don't think he has either, but they alone, there's only a few of them, they would make a nice portfolio. They're really, really interesting.
Needless to say, in 1989 and again in 2015, and probably everyone you've done since or in between those two dates, they were generated a good deal of curiosity and skepticism, particularly in the Lexington area community, I believe, with the first one. However, you resisted explanation.
Well, I still haven't really explained too much about it. And maybe it's sort of like what Louis Armstrong said about jazz when asked, what does it mean? And he said, man, you either get it or you don't. And I think that's true. I've never thought of myself as a teacher. An artist like Arturo Sandoval, that is also a professor at University of Kentucky, part of his function producing art, I think, is to explain it. I've always sort of resisted that process. And, I believe it or not, this might sound juvenile, I don't really think a lot about why I do these things. And I think as I've gotten older, I know I think even less. It's sort of like autopilot. I just, get the idea, I get the urge, and then I think about it a little bit about practicality and expense. And in the case of making objects, the storage and shipping and all those practical things that one must think of, I think that way, but then I just sort of do it. And I think it's disingenuous. It would be disingenuous to say nudity is not about sex. In fact, Kenneth Clark, the art historian, said it's disingenuous that all nudity is about sex. And I think it had to do with my own curiosity. Maybe it was as simple as wanting to see what these people look like nude. Though I have had people say certain things about the models that I never even noticed while mudding them, because it's at the risk of sounding sort of cliche, it's an extremely exhausting thing to do. One reason I got to the point of saying that to do one, I did not engage in the cleanup, because the cleanup could take hours, not only helping the models, but the actual physical space, is that I usually just go straight home, take a shower, and go straight to bed, and I'm out for hours. I'm drenched in sweat. It's extremely exhausting. The last one I thought was going to kill me. I think it's as simple as just being physically exhausted. I don't think it's some sort of, sort of supernatural thing that, energy's being drawn out of me. I don't think it's that. I just think it's a very hard thing to do. The models, I always thought it would be more interesting to interview the models, which I've planned to do for years, to hear them speak of the process. They are in unison in saying that it was like almost this religious kind of experience for them. It's not a religious experience for me. I'm not even sure I'd say it was a spiritual experience, which are not necessarily the same thing. But they talk very often about what it meant to them and how they feel so differently about their life, which I was amazed the first one that said that. And it's almost everyone that I've ever asked about. They just say, oh, my gosh, that was so cool. I'm so glad I did that.